Welcome to Kansas City Cannabis, where local roots and city pride thrive. Whether you're new or seasoned to cannabis, our expert bud tenders offer guidance and a welcoming atmosphere at our four KC locations. Experience genuine service and hometown heart. Visit kccannabis.org for more.
Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. It's a Red Friday, Football Friday, October 23rd, 2020. Let's start the Border Patrol Blitz with Missouri. It's Gabe DeArmond from PowerMizzou.com. Hello, Gabe. How are you?
Not bad. What's going on, guys?
You know, I'm tickled that Mizzou is going to have a football game tomorrow. First, we thought it was Vanderbilt, then it was at Florida, now it's home against Kentucky. And let's just start there. This is, look, it's no disaster if they lose, but man, what an opportunity for Eli Drinkwitz. All of the points he earned with Mizzou fans by beating LSU, I mean, this would be really, really important too, considering they've lost to Kentucky five straight times, and that was one of the things that worked against Barry Odom. He couldn't beat Kentucky. Tell me the importance of Mizzou ending this streak whenever they do it.
Well, I think this is the one where, if you look at the SEC East, if you're reasonable, you understand Georgia and Florida are ahead of everybody right now. And as long as they don't screw up and don't hire somebody terrible or don't have the rash injuries or whatever, they're generally the two best programs in this division for a number of reasons, history, geography, recruiting, all that. So the goal for everybody else has to be establish yourself as number three in the SEC East. And then there are going to be years where, hey, you beat one or both of those other two and you get some breaks and it works out. But you need to establish yourself. It's kind of like being in the Big 12. Just establish yourself as number three behind Texas and Oklahoma, and then you take your chances from there. Right now, Kentucky's number three. I looked at the numbers earlier this week from the last 5 years. Out of the other five teams in the East, Kentucky has the best overall record. They have the best SEC record. They're 10-5 against Tennessee, South Carolina, and Missouri straight up. Now, obviously, that is very much boosted by 5-0 against Missouri. But if you just change a couple of those Kentucky games, which, I mean, came down to the wire, then Mizzou's right there as the number three program in the East, you know, and that's where you want to be. So while Missouri fans want to talk about catching Georgia or catching Florida, what you need to do first is catch Kentucky, and then you move on to the other stuff.
Well said. Now, we saw some reserve offensive linemen get into the Chiefs game and perform very well, so that's left me asking, what are they going to do when everyone's healthy with those reserves that, like Allegretti and Kilgore, that perform so well? I'll ask you a similar question about Mizzou. You had some backup wide receivers step up and have monster games against LSU and were extremely productive. Are we going to see some of those guys? Did they earn playing time now that they're going to get their full complement of receivers back? It's a good problem to have, but let's be honest. There were some guys out there catching passes that I had to double check the depth chart, Gabe.
Yeah, I mean, 2 months ago, I'd never heard of Deonte Smith. You know, he had a walk-on tryout in January and made the team. Michael Wilson was a former quarterback. Barrett Bannister, former walk-on. These guys were out there making plays. Towski Dove is the guy Missouri really only took because they had a receiver that didn't qualify. So, yeah, I think those guys definitely earned more snaps. Now, whether they earned, you know, more snaps than the backup or than the other guys, whether they earned a start, that all remains to be seen. But they definitely earned more playing time and a chance to prove that, you know, the LSU game wasn't just a situation where you were going against a terrible pass defense that wasn't prepared and you caught people by surprise. They've got to go out and back it up, obviously, but I think they've earned the right to do that. When the depth chart came out, you know, Kiki Chisholm is still listed kind of as a co-starter, but really second on the depth chart. Damon Hazelton was listed third string. So I've got to think yes, it's a compliment to the guys that played, but I also think that depth chart sent a bit of a message from Eli Drinkwitz, because the truth is people kind of hang on these depth charts every week, and we told them, like, last year Missouri literally never changed its depth chart. I mean, if a guy was injured and out for the season, they would change it then. But other than that, we got the same depth chart in Week 12 that we got in Week 1, and it didn't really mean anything. So when a coach does that and makes that public, you know, makes it publicly known, hey, this guy's third string, I think that's pretty clear. He's sending a message to that player.
Nate Bucati.
Well, let's talk about this this Kentucky team a little bit. We just had Stan Weber on. He talked about the defense of the Wildcats, but maybe that their offense isn't so great. What are the areas that you think maybe are the biggest concern for the Tigers in that regard?
Yeah, I mean, their offense isn't great, but they keep winning games with it, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a little bit like watching some of Bill Snyder's teams really in the second incarnation, where they just did what nobody else was doing. They play in a way, I mean, Alabama's scoring 50 a game. SEC teams are throwing the ball all over the place. And Kentucky is winning with a run game and defense. They won 8 games last year with a wide receiver at quarterback. Now, Lynn Bowden, he's extremely talented, obviously, and a little bit different than just throwing anybody back there. But it's really a nod to Mark Stoops and what he's done. If I'm playing Kentucky, I put 7-8 guys in the box on every single down, and you just say, look, if Terry Wilson's going to beat us throwing the football, then he's just going to beat us. There's not much we can do about it because you can't stop everything. I mean, you guys we've all seen every week the approach against the Chiefs by NFL teams, and they're kind of saying, yeah, if Clyde Edwards-Helaire is going to run for 140 yards, then you're just going to beat us. I mean, we can't take all of it away, and I think you do the same thing with Kentucky. You force them to beat you throwing the football, and you also force them to beat you by not handing them the ball 4 times a game, which other teams have done. You can go back and forth whether turnovers are, you know, scheme, preparation, good plays, or luck, and I think there's some of all of it involved. But the bottom line is you don't get 3 pick sixes in 2 weeks if the other quarterback is playing well and making smart decisions.
Gabe DeArmond from PowerMizzou.com. All right, we'll see Connor Bazelak go up against a defense that has given up a grand total of 9 points in their last 2 games against Mississippi State and Tennessee. How is this game going to play out? What is your prediction and final score?
I think it's going to be pretty low scoring. I won't be surprised if Missouri wins necessarily, but when they have found as many ways as they have over the last 5 years to lose to Kentucky, I'm not sure how you predict that they're going to do it before they do it. My pick has been Kentucky 23-20. I won't be surprised if that were to go up a touchdown or down a touchdown, you know, Missouri win the game. But I think the pick going in has to be Kentucky by a score.
Gabe, thank you very much for the time. We appreciate it. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, guys. Have a good one.
That's Gabe DeArmond from PowerMizzou.com. That's where you go if you want the best coverage of Mizzou sports. PowerMizzou.com with Gabe DeArmond. Now let's talk K-State with Matt Walters.
Kansas State.
Hello, Matt. How are you today?
Doing good, fellas. How are you?
Doing very well. Sunflower Showdown, 11 a.m. kickoff in Manhattan, and I've heard some comments from Chris Klieman earlier this week about how they use this opportunity, this extra time, to try to get all of the young quarterbacks up to speed and ready now, knowing that they move forward without Skylar Thompson. And so that's important because, as we've seen, you might need to go use more than one quarterback. Every backup, every guy is one snap away from getting on the field, and so they took this opportunity to get that group ready for the rest of the season.
Yeah, I mean, I would go back a few weeks ago when, you know, K-State lost to Arkansas State, and they did a lot of work, you know, getting other guys ready before they went to Oklahoma and wound up winning that game. And there were, you know, plenty of guys that contributed that Saturday down in Norman to help K-State get that first win of the season. So, you know, it's a smaller piece of the pie in terms of just talking about quarterbacks, but, you know, they were able to do some good things with Will Howard. You know, he has caught on. Nick Austin's been in the program, and, you know, Jaron Lewis is a guy that's a tremendous athlete and just hasn't, you know, really seen field time yet. So it was important, and, you know, K-State's one step away from being at the third string quarterback, and they've had to deal with that. Lots of other teams have before. So, you know, I would expect Will Howard to be be in good shape and raring to go tomorrow.
Matt, one of the big storylines this whole week seems to keep coming up that this is a battle of two teams from the state of Kansas, but one school that seems to value players from the state of Kansas quite a bit more. And those players are not only on the roster, they're out playing in big games and making big plays, and they've got a chip on their shoulder in this game, even though their team is the team that always wins this game. And Stan just pointed out to us that this is something that Coach Kleiman has picked up where Bill Snyder left off. He is not trying to change that formula. And I guess that speaks to a bigger thing here of how hard it is to replace a legend like Bill Snyder. And it seems like Chris Kleiman has been able to stay himself but still do the things that Bill Snyder's done. How have you seen it from maybe on the inside, him and his coaching staff maintained that ability to get kids from Kansas and develop them?
Well, one, Nate, I think it simply starts with winning. Everybody wants to play for a winner. It just doesn't always work out that way. And, you know, when Bill Snyder stepped foot in Manhattan some 30-plus years ago, you know, at the top of the list was, you beat KU. And he did that virtually every time. So, Chris Kleiman's not doing everything that Bill Snyder did, and in my opinion, nor should he.
Right.
But one of the things that he is doing is making sure that this is a game that the guys understand, whether you're from Florida, Colorado, Texas, wherever, that you're going to beat Kansas. That's where you start in this thing. And, you know, I don't think you have to look any further than a guy on the staff like Colin Klein. Colin Klein can get up in front of the entire team. He can get up in a coach's meeting and get really passionate, really quick about, guys, this is one we don't lose. And for the most part, K-State hasn't lost, and even though it's a rivalry that is extremely one-sided, K-State still gets jacked up for it because you don't want to let the air out of the tires at 3-1 in the top 25 and lose this kind of ball game. So, yeah, it's KU, and KU hasn't won a game this year, and KU hasn't won a lot of games in the last decade, but this is not a game that you screw up, and you don't want to be that one team that loses this game.
Hey, Matt, I wanted to ask you, because we've talked so much about Deuce Vaughn, rightfully so. He's an amazing young player, and it sounds like from the press conferences this week that he might not be the only young running back who's really impressing the coaches. Chris Kleiman and Courtney Messingham both talked about Keon Mosey, who's a kid out of Lee Summit, so a local kid, that he's been great in practice. I think he's only got one or two carries so far this year, but do you think we might see him more as the season goes on?
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me at all, Nate. He's a very talented young man like Deuce is. You know, we've seen more of Keon, in the slot. You referenced just a couple carries for him. But I think that it's also a case of, Deuce caught on very quickly. Keon is getting there. You know, some guys it just takes a little bit longer. But, yeah, there's no doubt in my mind we're going to see a lot more of Keon Mosey, because he's a tremendous playmaker, and like Deuce Vaughn, that's why K-State recruited him and recruited him hard.
Matt, thank you very much for the time. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, guys, take care. Have a good weekend.
You do the same thing. That was Matt Walters talking Sunflower Showdown. Now let's move on to John Kirby from Jayhawk Slant.
Kansas.
Hello, John. How are you today?
I'm doing well, Stephen, and yourself?
Always excited to talk to you, because that means it's Friday and we are a day away from some football. But, hey, we've even got college football tonight, so let's go. 11 a.m. kickoff for the Sunflower Showdown, and unfortunately for Kansas, it will be without Puka Williams. And obviously he had his reasons for leaving, but just from a football perspective, What does this mean for Kansas? How devastating of a loss is that for their offense?
Yeah, Stephen, it is to an extent. You know, Puka Williams is probably one of the more explosive players in the country. He's one of those guys that when he gets a crease at any time, he can take it to the house or get a big gain. I mean, he's that shifty. He was that good. The problem is he was getting hit in the backfield so often, he couldn't even get started. So I don't know, you know, Puka is so talented, but until they can get some of those problems fixed up on the offensive line, even a guy like him that's so good and so elusive and so shifty, he couldn't find any running yards.
So this is the evergreen question again, JK. Who's going to play quarterback this week for the Jayhawks?
Yeah, Nate, you know, Les Miles this week has been, you know, it's like a riddle, you know. 2 weeks ago, Brent Dearman filled in for Les when he was out with the COVID thing. And, you know, he just came right out on Monday and said, Miles Kendrick is our starter. Well, Les came back this week, and he basically threw it out there that, you know, they're going to see if Jalen Daniels can go. If not, Miles Kendrick is healthy. And, by the way, Thomas McVitie is healing from a shoulder injury, so we'll see what he looks like. So he left it out there open-ended that three guys are going to be in the mix to see how they all look in practice.
Well, John, there haven't been many positives for KU this year, but they did do some things at the beginning of the game against West Virginia defensively that I guess caused West Virginia some problems early. I don't know, can you shine a light on one or two things that maybe they could take positively out of that process?
Yeah, Nate, defensively, they did do some good things. And there are some positives that you can absolutely take from it. I thought the corners played very well. Drew Prox looked really good at linebacker. And some young kids up front, Dejon Terry and Marcus Roger, looked real good in there at defensive line. And I'm just, you know, these guys are young. Some of these guys just got on campus this summer. And you're starting to see some of these young kids play some football. They got a nice pass rush. They pressured the West Virginia quarterback. The problem is, Nate, by the third quarter, they're playing 30 more snaps than the offense because they can't. The offense is going three and out all the time. And eventually the defense, it's just there's not much depth. So they just wore down.
I mean, look, is it too simple just to say they've got to find a quarterback? I mean, forever KU hasn't had one since Todd Reesing was there, and I'm not trying to pick on these three kids or anything like that, but when I look at the numbers, they're averaging 4.7 yards per attempt. They've got more touchdowns than interceptions. It doesn't really seem to none of the three have really shown so far, but I feel like they actually have some skill position players. I feel like they've got a couple receivers that are decent. I know the offensive line's not anything to brag about, but is it just down to quarterback play? Is there anything they can do to try to make the offense moderately successful enough to take some of that pressure off the defense?
Well, you know, Nate, I'll take you back to your days when you were probably on the sideline at KU. And, you know, Brian Luke, was he an all-conference type guy? No.
Adam Barman? Yeah.
Jason Swanson? Okay, yep. So here's my point. Back then, you had guys like Mangino, Ed Warner, John Reagan. You had some pretty smart offensive line guys, and they were tough, and they were demanding, and they found ways to mold those offensive lines back then to be able to patch something together, to move the football one way or another. And that's what Kansas needs to do. When you ask about quarterback, I don't know what's more important right now. Is it quarterback or is it offensive line? Because we can't even tell what the quarterbacks are doing because by the time they're getting their five-step drops in, they're under heat. I mean, they can't even at times go through a progression to see who's going to be open or what's going to be open. So sometimes I sit here and try to, you know, pick on the quarterbacks, but I sit here and go, there's no way to do it because these guys don't have any time to throw the football.
It sounds to me like you're talking about coaching. I mean, those early Mangino teams, you make a great point. Adam Barman, I remember having a couple games where, you know, he would move the ball up and down the field and just execute the game plan. Mangino used to always talk about, we don't have to dominate the other team at the point of attack. We just have to get a hat on a hat. That's what he used to always say. If we can make sure we get a hat on a hat, we can at least have enough time for a play to develop. And they only had a few playmakers at that time, Well, I was talking about Charles Gordon earlier. You know, John Randall, whoever it was, they'd find creative ways to get the ball to those guys and do enough. They weren't anything to write home about offensively, but do enough. And it just, right now we're not seeing it, from this team.
No, and again, is coaching to blame a little bit? Yeah, there's probably some, you know, when we look back on what Kansas had back in those years we just talked about, they didn't have any real all-conference linemen outside of Anthony Collins finally coming around in 2007. So it can be done. I mean, look at what K-State's doing. I mean, they've got five brand-new offensive linemen in there. So it can be done. I think they've just got to find a way to do it. You know, Nate, I talked to David Lawrence this week. He's an old lineman from KU, and he still thinks in these last six games, he thinks there's a way they can find a way to improve and patch things together. So it'll be interesting to see if they can develop.
The last thing I want to ask about JK, because this is a mismatch this year. I think most people think that. Maybe KU will surprise us all. But the bigger question to me is the direction. We've got two coaches in this game that have been at their schools for the same amount of time. And we talked about it with Steven back when the two hires were made. It's going to be interesting to see two very different hires between Klieman and Les Miles. And one of the big storylines this week, again, is State of Kansas. All these kids from the state of Kansas that are not only on the roster for K-State, but they're on the roster and producing, and it isn't there for KU. What do you cover recruiting a lot. That's a big part of your deal. What do you see from the KU recruiting now, and is that trend going to change at all?
You know, Nate, I don't know. I don't know if it will, because the first thing Kansas is going to have to do is they're going to have to win, okay? Because when you look at when you talk about local recruiting, the high school recruits now, what have they seen? They've seen a lot of winning from Kansas State, and they haven't seen much winning from Kansas at all. I was talking to somebody about this not long ago. Look at the parents of a lot of these high school kids. They grew up watching K-State, you know, that are dads of the recruits now. They grew up in watching K-State be successful. They're in that age range now. So, you know, the thought is you look at Kansas State and you just see success in their programs, and when you look at Kansas, you don't see much at all. So, for now, Kansas tries to recruit locally, okay? But for whatever reason, they get hit hard around here locally for not having a good program. Kids don't give them a lot of looks. So they've got to go other places like Louisiana and Arkansas and Texas, where maybe their image is a little bit better, and the kids there don't hear as much negativity about the program, and they have better success recruiting outside. Now, do they want to recruit local players? Absolutely, but you still have to sign 25 kids.
All right, John, what's the score going to be tomorrow in Manhattan?
You know, Stephen, God, I watch K-State, and it's just, Klieman has done an amazing job there. I think he really has. I think they've been outgained in all three of their Big 12 wins. They're like fifth in the nation in turnovers. I mean, they are so well coached. We partner with Pro Football Focus, and right now, K-State special teams for the season is rated like 90.8, which is just, it's off the charts. It's off the charts. So, you know, I don't know if Kansas State is good enough offensively to line up and just pound it on Kansas, but they're good enough to score. And I don't think Kansas is good enough to score on Kansas State offensively. Then you always got to figure out if K-State's going to have that pick six or the block punt for a touchdown against Kansas, which they usually do. So I think this one's going to be a little lower scoring than Vegas says. I'm going to go Kansas State 31, Kansas 14.
John, thanks for the time. We'll talk to you next week.
See you guys.
That was John Kirby. Thanks to Gabe DeArm and Matt Walters and John Kirby for participating in our Border Patrol Blitz. Back after this with Mike McFarland to talk about World Series Game 3. You can hear that tonight right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB.